On tonight's episode, we watched Look Who's Talking Now.
That's right, listeners. The Flophouse goes straight to the dogs.
Because there's dogs in the movie. Because it's a movie with dogs.
Yeah. All right.
I did it.
Everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
And you know I'm Stuart Wellington.
And you probably had a premonition that Elliot Kalin would be here. Well, you were right.
That's right. We're the Flophouse podcast.
Starring
us. Us.
In the Flophouse.
The original
flop.
Bad boys of flopcasting.
I think the only bad boys of flopcasting, which also makes us the only good boys of flopcasting.
Yeah, where's your yardstick for good versus bad boys?
Well, bad boys are coming for you. Or mm-hmm. Were they coming for the bad boys in that song?
Well, they were coming after the bad boys, yeah.
Oh, okay, never mind then. Never mind.
So this is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it. And tonight...
We did not watch a bad movie.
Well, tonight...
No, we did not.
Tonight we're taking part in a little thing called a pod crawl. Now, we've done this a couple times before where we get together with a couple of other... podcasts, and we watch a series of connected movies.
It's like a crossover where no one meets each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we are running the Look Who's Talking series with Read It and Weep and Too Beautiful to Live with Luke Burbank. And so the Read It and Weep guys, I believe...
Read It and Weep, a show that I think... Have we all done a guest spot on at some point?
Yeah.
Yep.
I think so, yeah.
And we've done the previous... Two pod crawls with?
Yeah, the Star Wars one and the, what was the other one?
Yeah, the Any Which Way But Loose.
Nope, that was with We Hate Movies.
So. Oh, okay.
Dan's memory, zero.
Anyway, point is.
Watched Look Who's Talking.
They watched Look Who's Talking.
The classic film about, hey, what if babies could talk and they sounded like Bruce Willis?
Yep,
two
1989's
hit
Look Who's
film.
Talking. Yeah, yeah,
and
a hit film so hot. The next year, Look Who's Talking 2 came out.
And then there was a little bit of a lag before our film, Look Who's Talking Now.
I'm assuming it went through multiple rewrites so they could get the perfect script.
I was going to say, Too Beautiful to Live did the second film in the series.
That's
where
the one with the talking toilet.
Fill me up.
What's the heightening to empty. One talking baby? Two talking babies.
They had to learn the lesson that Walt Disney learned with Three Little Pigs, where he said, you can't beat pigs with pigs. Mm. He couldn't just keep making Three Little Pigs cartoons. He had to do other stuff that wasn't pigs.
He couldn't make cartoons where a pig beats another pig.
No, it's impossible, because pigs always form an alliance against humans. Animal Farm by George Orwell. I talked about it on your brother's podcast.
Yeah, and they have no arguments in that book, right?
No,
none of the pigs have anything bad happen to them.
Perfectly well. Yeah?
Nothing.
So, Look Who's Talking is about a talking baby. But he's not really talking, it's just what he's thinking. Look mm-hmm. Who's Talking Too, you got two talking babies. Luke is talking now. The kids have grown up.
But we have a gender balance.
Yes. Yeah. Finally, we've achieved gender Look Who's Talking parity after so many years of progress. There was once a time when girl babies couldn't even vote. And mm-hmm. you know what? They still can't because they're babies.
Yeah.
They can't understand it. Today, we're actually recording on the night of the New York primary. And my wife took our son Sammy with her to go voting. And he could not tell me which candidate they voted for. This two-year-old kid had no understanding of what was going on in Democratic politics.
Maybe he was just trying to keep his vote private.
Maybe, yeah. That's true. I asked him, so who'd you vote for? And he goes, voted. I was like, all right, close enough, I guess. He was more excited about the
way to
the civic
the
duty is the main thing.
Oh, civic's not the only duty he's making. Oh, dad humor. Anyway, so Look Who's Talking Now. The kids are grown up. They're uh-huh. already talking. To see a five-year-old talking is not impressive enough to go to the movies for and pay.
Yeah,
at the time, $6 for a ticket.
Yeah.
Plus you got popcorn, plus Twizzlers probably. Then you see the thing about the candy floating through space in the beginning, and you're like, oh, gummy bears, of course. You run out and get those. Yeah. Then you got to sit. They didn't even have screen entertainment, so it's not like you could buy time with that. You had to hurry. And when you get back.
Is this back when there would be guys walking around with little boxes hanging from their shoulder?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it was the 40s.
The Will
Popcorn?
Rogers.
Yeah.
Popcorn?
I thought you were talking about the Will Rogers Foundation. You got to put in a couple bucks for that, too.
Oh, yeah. Whatever happened to that? That used to be at like every movie theater.
They realized that Will Rogers was dead and couldn't hurt them
anymore.
Couldn't
bring him. It's just a projection racket.
Yeah. He was totally
see,
another
It
heads.
Seems he died in a plane crash 70 years ago. Why are we still doing this? So look who's talking now. What's going to be talking now? There are obviously a lot of options. Cars.
You mentioned the toilet.
Plants. Now, there is a talking toilet in one scene in Look Who's Talking To.
Uh-huh.
It's a fantasy sequence. And if you want fantasy sequences... Look Who's Talking Now is chock full of filler in the form of fantasy sequences.
Oh, boy.
So what's going to talk? Is it going to be the sky? Mm. Is it going to be fire telling people, light me, burn your
is
house?
Is it going to be like a television set?
Now, that again, if that was talking, it would not be that impressive.
Okay.
Is it going to be like a talking doll?
Like a
Chucky?
Animal.
I mean, one of those Chuckies or Talkie Tinas? Yeah. Here's what it is. Everyone's clothing talks.
Oh, that's what's going on.
They're all saying, I'm touching your boobs.
Yeah, all the clothes are perverts. Yeah. I'm touching your butt right now.
Oh, boy.
I'm brightly
all over your penis.
I'm brightly colored.
Well, there are a lot of brightly colored shows.
Yeah.
Shows, brightly colored clothes.
It's a real
Dick Tracy.
Dick Tracy of a movie.
Now, mm-hmm. Dan, what really is the extra talking element?
The extra talking element is dogs.
Dogs.
The series
dogs.
Has gone to the dogs.
Mm-hmm. As Nick Stewart said already.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, like 10
oh,
minutes
man.
Ago.
I forgot. Already, this episode is starting rough.
Oh, put this one in the pound and put it down.
Mm-hmm.
Or as they say when they're about to kill Danny DeVito's character Rox, to be destroyed,
mm-hmm.
which I think is supposed to be a less visceral word than kill, but it sounds way worse.
Yeah.
If you say you're going to kill a dog, it's like, oh, well, at least its body will still
yeah.
exist, right?
You destroy
you say,
it. Destroy its it. Soul has been banished to the other world.
On an atomic level, it's just been torn apart into particles.
It's like when I get a sandwich and I'm like, I'm going to destroy this sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
Like the guy that's selling me the sandwich is like, holy shit, dude, give me that sandwich back. Here's your money. Get out of my restaurant.
I couldn't let you do that.
You said that weirdly sexually, too. I'm going to destroy this sandwich.
That's how I talk to service workers.
Boy. I'm just going to wreck this sandwich.
Unleaded, please. Fill her up.
Mm-hmm. You guys are making it grosser than mine was.
Maybe.
So we open in a single shot.
So the year is 1993.
One shot?
A single take, long shot. It is irreversible.
Now, the year's 1993 when this came out. This was the big movie of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course it wasn't. Jurassic Park came out in 1993. The biggest movie maybe ever made. And the dinosaurs.
I think scientifically that's untrue. I think that
I mean,
name a bigger movie.
Gone with the Wind.
Dinosaurs are like 60 feet tall. No one in that movie is over
You're
six
right.
feet tall.
Dinosaurs could eat Scarlett O'Hara very easily.
Incredibly mm-hmm. easily. Think about the Civil War with dinosaurs. It's called Abraham Lincoln Dinosaur Hunter.
I'm thinking about it and I'm loving it. Here's $700,000.
Perfect. Thank you.
So wait a second. In this case, are the dinosaurs plantation owners?
Yes.
Okay. Well, another reason to hate dinosaurs, I guess.
No, but I like dinosaurs. Oh, shoot. Anyway, so we open, as Stuart said, with a single long take shot of our heroes, John Travolta and Kirstie Alley. We've known them through the entire Look Who's Talking saga. They met. They fell in love.
Oh, sorry.
Kirstie Alley had a baby out of wedlock. John Travolta married her. They had another baby in wedlock.
They are, according to IMDb, the tagline for this movie is, "The world's favorite family is back."
That is incredibly unearned promotional hype.
Hyperbolic.
I mean, as if...
Name one
more favorite family.
Now, considering the movie is set at Christmas, Jesus and his parents, hugely popular throughout the world. And I'm talking about both his dad...
I was going to say the family from Married with Children, the Bundys.
The Bundys.
They were huge at this
the
point.
The Simpsons, mm-hmm. even bigger. Let's not forget the Winslows and the Huxtables.
The Cosbys. Mm-hmm.
Well, the Cosbys and the Huxtables are the same people.
Oh, yeah. I'm bad at TV.
And the Dick Van Dykes's and the uh-huh. Bunkers and the family from the show Dinosaurs. I don't remember if that was on the show
Of the families Family Feud.
Yeah, exactly. All of them.
So all the people who, under their breath while they're listening to this show on public transportation, who said the name of that family on Dinosaurs, please tweet it when you get off the bus.
Yeah, please do. I think it's the Sinclairs.
That makes sense. But that doesn't sound
like
a pun enough.
Tweet it at Flophouse Cat.
Well, no, all the cat. Yeah.
Tweet all of it at Flophouse
yep,
Cat.
All Dinosaurs-related correspondence goes directly to my personal
hashtag
Twitter.
Hashtag not the mama.
Oh, no.
Look, you gotta love him. He told you so.
Yep.
All the characters were named after oil companies.
Oh, wait, the dinosaurs were?
Yeah, it was a joke.
I don't, really? What's the joke? Is it that their latex masks are made out of oil?
I think it's that when their bones would become oil eventually.
Yeah, it was sort of a morbid joke. Maybe these characters that you love will eventually die and become fossilized, and then you'll burn them up in your car.
Considering the final episode of the series was the Ice Age coming and everybody is about to die,
it's
pretty close. Anyway, so Kirstie Alley and John Travolta, America's favorite family.
Mm-hmm.
World's
favorite family.
Now you'd forgot the world's favorite family because in Namibia they're like, what's going on with the Look Who's Talking family? In Japan they're like, oh, what's happening now to the family whose last name I don't remember, even though they're
very,
my favorite.
Yeah, they get the poster. It says Look Who's Talking now, and they're like, who? For God's sake, who?
Tell us who's been added to the family. They had the same experience I had when I saw the poster for Gremlins 2 and my mind exploded. They made another one just for me?
Oh, man.
Why is that Gremlin
like the HBO first look for that thing? And I was like, a spider gremlin? Do I live in the best time that has ever existed?
Medically, yes.
I remember when that movie, when Gremlins 2 was still in theaters, I had all the collectible cards. And I would just go on road trips. When my parents would take me on road trips, I'd read the backs of the
collectible
cards.
Yeah, like you were watching
the
movie.
What was the lobby card I gave you? Was that Phoebe Cates being terrorized in the...
Yes, in the elevator. When the gremlin's arms go through and goes, fourth floor, woman's lingerie! Because it's just a Looney Tunes cartoon at that point. And when the elevator crashes, there's literally like a boink sound effect that as they squish. What a good movie. We should have watched that. There's tons of talking shit in that movie.
Yeah,
anyway...
Yeah.
So these two are dealing with
tons of talking shit. You're like, a normal movie, everyone just talks. They don't make a big deal out of it.
Look,
so once again,
every movie since 1929 roughly has had talking in it for the most. I mean, there's some movies that haven't, but most of them have. Even Charlie Chaplin eventually was like, I gotta get on this talking boat. Mm-hmm. So in 1993, to release a movie where things are talking, not so impressive.
Yeah.
Kirstie Alley, John Travolta. They're dealing with the stress, one, of being huge
of their two
Scientologists,
the thing
and two, of having these very stressful children.
And then right away, the movie loses its audience because you expect the children to have the voices of Bruce Willis and Roseanne Barr, respectively.
Yes. Why didn't they dub them into these children's faces?
It would have been perfect, and it would have made sense thematically.
You know that this boy is going to grow up to be Bruno,
mm-hmm.
and this girl is going to grow up to be She-Devil.
Yeah, that's her character.
Yeah, and so they're having it's a really stressful life having two young kids. They don't want to go to bed. They don't want to take a bath.
Benny Hilling around the apartment all the time.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. Yakety Sax is always playing in their minds, and occasionally on their stereo. Because they love novelty songs.
Yeah.
They're like, put that Dr. Demento mix on. This is going to be great.
Yeah. They're like, fish heads, roly-poly fish.
You know what,
heads.
Honey? Let me cue up the music video. You know, Bill Paxton directed this? Yes, I know, honey. Thank you. Anyway, so they love novelty songs. We've established that.
That's their defining trait.
Now, John Travolta, as you know, is a pilot who's out of work and became a cab driver. And he's like kind of a goofy ne'er-do-well.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirstie Alley
does...
He
always wears shirts that are about five sizes too big for him.
Because it's the 90s. This is something I forget all the time until I watch 90s movies. Everyone's clothes were enormous. Like, everyone looked like a fucking Howard Chaykin drawing with huge shoulder pads and, like, jodhpur pants. There's a scene where the son is, who's like, what, six, is walking mm-hmm. down the stairs, and he's wearing pants that look like they belong on a grown man. Like, they're so wide. It's like, what are you doing to these kids? But that's – you guys, I assume, had clothes like that back then. I certainly did, where my mom was buying me shirts that, like – had so much excess fabric in
what them. I remember about the 90s is that I wanted a Simpsons emblazoned outfit because that was the hippest thing for a while, was to have any Simpsons thing. And so I somehow I settled upon the nerdiest Simpsons option that was possible.
Milhouse.
Which was Bart giving the peace sign in front of a big peace symbol saying, "Peace, man." And I thought I was the coolest.
Were you the coolest?
I was not.
So where did you get that shirt from?
I think it was a JCPenney sweatshirt.
A JCPenney?
Yeah, JCPenney.
Wow. I didn't know you started with retail before you went into rapping.
I had 99 problems, and all of them were that shirt.
See, because my dad used to get us Simpsons stuff, but my dad used to work in Manhattan at the time. He'd go
so
in during
they were
the day,
bootleg
and he'd just pick up tons of bootleg shirts off the
awesome.
Street.
Awesome. Do you still have them?
Probably somewhere. My mom doesn't throw anything out.
And you, they still fit?
Probably. But my sister, my brother, and I would always be wearing Simpsons or Ninja Turtles shirts where the colors were all wrong, where Bart has, like, a yellow shirt and green shorts, or, like, this guy's got a red bandana, but he's holding nunchucks. That doesn't make sense. Michelangelo holds the nunchucks. And I remember very much the day when my dad came home with no bootleg shirts, and he was like, all I could find was Homie the Clown merchandise, so I'm not buying that for you.
It was too urban for you?
It was too – I mean, in retrospect, Homie the Clown was an inappropriate character for a 10-year-old to have emblazoned on.
Yeah, because he's not eating shorts and being an underachiever.
But appropriate for this movie, because it looked like it was the costume designer was the same person who did everything for In Living Color.
It was – there were a lot of bold, bright colors.
Yeah.
Big styles.
With contrast sleeves on them.
At one point, John Travolta.
The haberdasher in charge of this movie.
Oh, there were so many hats.
So many hats. They should have called this Look Who's Hatting Now. Or just Look Who's Talking Hats. And the hats should have talked, like in Lidsville. But they're not big.
How
just
did they not put fucking hats on the dogs? They must have been littering the floor with hats.
Now, what kind of hats do you think they would have? Like one of them have like a 10-gallon hat?
Yeah, because it's a cowboy dog.
Or
Dan, you're out of this conversation.
Obviously,
now.
The poodle will have a beret.
Of course,
the traditional poodle
but
hat.
But like Rox would have one of those like a beat up old hat with the front flipped up.
Yeah, maybe it has a press card in it, like a corner torn off.
All right.
And or maybe like he's got like a Newsies cap.
A Newsies cap.
It likes a little bit of it's ripped, and she's wearing a tiara.
Okay. Oh, that's technically a hat.
What if he has a hobo hat? Which is just a top hat with the top flopping off.
Yeah, he could definitely do that. Little dog bindle over his shoulder. He's wearing dog shoes with the toes open. And she's wearing like one of those old fashioned 19th century hats with a real dead stuffed bird on it.
Yep.
And glass cherries.
Yeah.
That would be great. I would like to see a dog's neck try and support all that weight.
It would be very difficult. So anyway, I want us to point out of the clothes, John Travolta at one point.
Yeah, paint us a tapestry.
He dresses up for a fancy dinner in a blue sport jacket or blazer or suit jacket that is the bluest blue, and it is so bright. It's like he took a blue screen from Industrial Light and Magic and just cut it into a shirt shape. Yep. And just stuffed his arms through it.
It's like you're staring deep into the baby blues of Paul Atreides.
Who has far too much spice from the atmosphere in his bloodstream. There's when he waves his hands in front of it, it looks like he is a weatherman.
He's like, you'll just add a suit in post.
You know how when the Rancor is fighting Luke, there's like a green a process shot line around it? It's like John Travolta's hands had that when they were in front of his jacket. It was really weird.
Yeah.
It's a color that does not exist in nature in any form, and somehow they tore it from some like the Hadron Collider when two atoms exploded and turned it into a jacket that he wore. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was a blue suit.
And luckily,
he's, so you know blue. I mean?
And he's with and Kirstie Alley and Olympia Dukakis. His two dates are also dressed very matchingly.
Kirstie Alley is what? She's in a bright red thing.
And yeah, it was a red called a dress.
Has a purple number on
that matches her purple earrings.
Yeah, so they are stressed out from their two kids. He's looking for work. He's having trouble finding it. It doesn't help that he has a light-up tie that he wears as a joke. He's kind of a goofy dad, and she's kind of a stressed-out mom. And they are always trying to do it and always getting interrupted.
Yeah.
And so she finds out she's been fired from her job. At the same time, he goes on an interview at what appears to be the headquarters of the Tyrell Corporation from Blade Runner with a woman who is a kind of icy blonde CEO who doesn't wear a shirt, just a bra with a blazer over
it. She's got a collection of blazers that, the boobs are front and center.
It's like the guys...
Wait, hold on a second, Dan. Where else should the boobs be? Like back and diagonal? Underneath and in circles?
It's like what would happen if the
you know sometimes they drift off to the side, I guess.
Yeah, and then you gotta push them slightly when you're going out with a Gumby.
That's the main problem that women face, right? They gotta recenter the boobs.
Every now and then that's what they go to a gynecologist. They're getting it recalibrated and re-geared. Yeah.
I gotta re-rack these things.
The suspension on these is shot. I gotta go into Jiffy Boob. Get it worked on.
Oh no.
I don't know if the listeners could hear literally the air escaping Stewart's body as that pun hit him like a punch to the gut.
Ow.
So,
his boss is basically, if the weird science guys scanned a Nagel print and she sprang to life.
And so he gets a job as her private pilot, and Kirstie Alley is instantly threatened by this beautiful, young, rich woman. But what can she do? They need to support the family, and so he takes the job.
Yeah.
Little realizing that she has designs on him, and also will make him work all the time, taking him away from his family. Now, their son wants nothing more for Christmas than a DOG. That's right, a dog. Four paws.
Took me a second, tail. But I spelled it.
We had to do it in our head.
And their little girl wants nothing more than to defeat Charles Barkley in a one-on-one basketball game, which we see in a fantasy sequence that has no bearing on the plot.
And is oddly sexual.
Yes, it's a weird... She stares at him on TV in a weirdly sexual way, and it's... I don't...
And I don't know about you guys, but I was looking up at the IMDb trivia for this scene.
I was not.
And they specified that they had to slow down the basketball footage like a Hong Kong martial arts movie, or else the audience wouldn't know what was going on.
They had to specify that.
Hold on a second. But do they not? Wait, so are basketball games slowed down? Because people watch those all the time.
Well, no, normal basketball games don't happen at the speed that this little girl is dribbling the ball.
Yeah, that's the thing. She's so good.
And then dropping a hot dunk on Charles Barkley.
Yeah, they did bring in a wire foo master from the Shaw Brothers stable for that scene. Now, he wants a dog. They don't want to get him a dog. They live in a tiny New York apartment in a New York that looks suspiciously like Los Angeles in every single way, except that the cars have New York license plates.
Mm-hmm.
But they probably shot it in Vancouver. So I don't know. Maybe that's what Vancouver looks like.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
The only experience I have of Vancouver is seeing the movie The Score with Robert De Niro, which takes place in Vancouver.
And the only experience I have of The Score with Robert De Niro is...
when I mentioned it just now?
Is Marlon Brando saying to Frank Oz that he's not one of the puppets, that he can stick his hand up his ass and make him do what he wants.
Ironically...
My only experience with Frank Oz is watching Star Wars.
Star Wars? He's not in that. He's in Empire Strikes Back.
But he's not in Star Wars?
He is in Star Wars. Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's the movie where Star Wars is reinterpreted using real stars.
Mm-hmm.
Andromeda, our own sun.
Beetlegeist,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And Sirius.
Altair.
Sirius, the dog star. Speaking of dogs, they're in this movie. Mm-hmm. So the son wants a dog. There's a mishap with a Santa Claus. Kirstie Alley briefly has a job as an elf at a Santa Claus thing. This is a very Christmassy movie, and so pretty quickly I shut off much of my brain because Christmas...
Because you hate our Savior, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
Hate is a strong word. I have no emotional connection to...
Well, he is an emotional connection to you.
And nope.
And so, I have a pamphlet.
And potentially an ethnic connection to him, too.
Oh, much stronger ethnic connection, potentially. Yeah, there's a lot of controversy.
I'm waiting on Elliot's birth certificate.
I'm going to go on Finding Your Roots, and they're going to do my DNA study. It's going to say 100% Christ.
Yeah. I'll check your birth certificate. I knew you were a secret Keebler.
Born in a tree, huh? So she gets a job as an elf. There's a lot of Christmas in this movie, and the movie is very, very heavily relying on the audience having an emotional connection to Christmas and the idea of a family being together on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And since Christmas, to me, is associated with Easier to get a movie ticket.
Theoretically.
Easier to get a table at a Chinese restaurant.
I mean, you're not a monster, right? You can theoretically
understand. I wish I was a monster.
You can understand.
Since I was a kid, I've wanted to be a monster.
Can you be like a Howie Mandel little monster's monster where you're peeing in apple juice jugs?
That I don't want to be.
Okay.
I would rather be, okay, number one, Godzilla-type monster.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Number two, a Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, a Wolfman, but I can control the transformations.
Number four, a Duckula.
A Duckula. Oh, sure. Yeah, come on.
Number five, Benicula.
Yeah, there's a lot of Culas that I could be. Drac, Bun, Duck.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, now, would you want to be a Godzilla-sized Dracula?
That would be silly. How am I going to find a tuxedo big enough to wear? I'm just going to be a naked Dracula. And that's not something anyone needs to see. So
I was just saying that as a gentleman of the Jewish faith, you can still understand the idea of wanting to be with your family on the holidays.
Oh, look, I have a wife and child.
Yeah.
Much more.
What?
Sorry. Much more. I was cheating on you with my family.
You son of a bitch.
A much more important holiday to me, Passover, is coming up at the end of the week. We're recording this. And it's very important for me to be with my family during that holiday. I'm not going to make a movie about it.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I will. I'm going to call it Passed Over.
Bitter Herbs.
Yeah, it's like that movie, A Celebration.
Yeah.
Except it's at Passover. That was the one, right, where it turns out everything's terrible?
I mean, yes, everything's terrible.
So wait, it's an ironic title?
What?
It's an ironic title, like a comedy or entertainment?
Yeah. What's entertainment?
It's that Neil Hamburger movie.
Oh, right. Okay. Not That's Entertainment, which is not ironic. Very entertaining. So,
or Gunsmoke.
Also not ironic.
Oh, it's
let's think of some other movies that don't have ironic titles.
Yeah. Hellraiser, not ironic.
I raised a lot of hell. Candyman, he appears in it.
Yep, sounds
kind of ironic though. Look Who's Talking Now, a little ironic in that it's not who's talking, it's what's talking.
Death, it's more dramatic.
Death really did become her.
Yeah, they looked great.
Yeah.
Come on. Now, Look Who's Talking Now. So they want to be together on Christmas. Who wouldn't want to be? But his job keeps taking them apart, and they both worry about their marriage. At the same time, John Travolta, to get on his son's good side, brings him to the pound to get a dog.
Yeah, after his son realizes that Santa Claus doesn't exist.
Let's rewind to the introduction of Rox, voiced by Danny DeVito, who is a dog who is born in a litter of dogs. Each of the Look Who's Talking movies, as kids' movies, starts with a scene that introduces sperm flying towards an egg.
And if you had been taking bets as to whether or not this movie would feature the song Hound Dog, you would clean up on your bet.
Yeah, it is. Although it is 1-to-1 odds.
Yeah.
You would win exactly the same amount of money that you bet.
I think that
you are literally, you might as well just not make the bet.
Now, I'll be honest with you. I think that seeing the original Look Who's Talking with the credits of a sperm fertilizing an egg may have been, up until that point, the
most erotic thing you'd ever seen.
I saw it at a church lock-in, and it may have been the...
What kind of monster locked you in a church?
It may have been the clearest explanation of how an egg is fertilized that I'd seen or understood up until that point.
Sure.
Like, I saw this in early high school, and it is the state of sex education in this country that Look Who's Talking probably got it across the clearest, like what the deal was.
Well, did they show you the PG rated cut, or did they show you the R rated cut where you actually see the penis's head enter and then it's the urethra open like the maw of a sandworm?
Just spewing it out.
Yeah. That didn't happen. But in here, it's dog sperm and dog eggs. A litter is born, and the one that nobody wants, the runt, if you will, is Rox, played by Danny DeVito.
Voiced by Danny DeVito, although I'm assuming when they were blocking out the scenes, he and Diane Keaton put on dog outfits.
He and Diane Keaton put on dog outfits, and they staged it, and they go, okay, bring in the real dogs. What if they shot the whole thing with Diane Keaton and Danny DeVito in dog costumes? They're like, this doesn't look good at all. We'll just CGI some dogs in there over them.
I just want to imagine these little kids acting with Danny DeVito on all fours.
And Diane Keaton on all fours wearing horrific latex dog masks.
And Danny DeVito is so excited on the premiere to see himself in the movie. He's just, what are they? All right. And walks out, angry.
This is the Lorax all over again, even though that hasn't been made yet. So what did he say, Stuart?
I'm just glad I would have been really sad because Rhea Perlman, I'm sure, dressed up really nice to see her boy all yeah. up on the big screen.
Yeah, she had a diamond dog-shaped brooch. Mm-hmm. He actually wore his
Mother of Pearl.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He wore his costume to the premiere. So everyone, they didn't even know it was him. They just thought it was some crazy dog man. And they shooed him away with a broom.
they shoot him. They're like, get this dog boy out of here. Go back to Riffs.
Yep, they shot him.
Oh, no. You gotta understand. You gotta understand. It's me, Daniel DeVito.
Sure it is. Who's the limoncello magnate, Danny DeVito.
Magnate. Last time I checked, Danny DeVito wasn't half man, half dog, you freak. It's me, John Candy from Spaceballs. Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. Barf, it's great to meet you.
Come in, Mr. Mogg.
Mr. Mogg with Michael Keaton.
Mr. Mogg is my father.
Call me Bernie Mogg. Now, anyway, Rocks, he briefly pals around with a homeless man. That doesn't work out because he gets caught by the animal control person.
Yeah, we get a lot
person.
Of shots of a dog running around and Danny DeVito providing voiceover.
And Danny DeVito just throwing jokes, maybe ad-libbed, maybe not, onto the screen. You have to assume Danny DeVito and Diane Keaton each did their jobs for this movie in about 90 minutes, maybe mm-hmm. 2 hours.
One can only hope.
He goes to the
Can
pound.
We do another take on that, Mr. DeVito? No? All right. Thank you.
Nope.
Miss Keaton, another take on... Okay.
I prefer to think Diane Keaton kept them there really late trying to get every line perfect.
Yeah.
She's like, you don't understand. This is Diane Keaton you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Everything I do is important
to me. I have
to
become Daphne the dog.
Rox gets... He's about to be destroyed at the pound, but luckily John Travolta and his son save him by adopting him. But when they get home, they find that John Travolta's boss, the sexy British lady,
yep.
she's British too, yep. sexy British lady has given them a super fancy poodle dog with the voice of Diane Keaton. Again, as we explained, not played by Diane Keaton physically.
Although, probably.
We can only assume the mocap was done by Diane Keaton in real life. These dogs are a handful. Daphne needs all this special treatment, and Rox is always chewing up the shoes.
Mm-hmm. It was sort of charming to see old-style dogs talking in a movie where they didn't feel like the need to, you know.
Old-style dogs? Yeah, my dog, say meow.
I mean, they didn't have the technology.
Hearing dogs in '06, we talk like this.
I mean, they didn't
we still play poker around here, not those Game Boys.
Oh, I want to see a dog's playing Game Boys painting so badly now.
Yep.
They're not
Game Boys. Fucking Tetris?
Maybe one of them is playing Lynx. But the other ones are all playing Tetris and they're not talking to each other.
That's the modern thing that dogs do is they play Game Boys.
Well, I don't know, Candy Crush, but Game Boy means something to me. You were saying
they don't have animated. I mean, like that started with Babe, so it's not like they had the technology.
The Babe
back
with John Goodman.
That's mm-hmm. right. They animated John Goodman's mouth.
See, I always thought they just put peanut butter on his teeth so that he would look at me. It would look like he was talking.
That's right.
In fact, look who's talking.
That's John Goodman the movie.
Yeah, but you're right. There's no animated mouths. There's no puppets. It's just a dog. It's kind of fun
to see the old style of like, I don't know, just. Just putting a voice over a dog.
I gotta tell you, Dan, I'm nostalgic for a lot of old movie production techniques. This is not one that plucked at my heartstrings. Oh, the laziest thing. They're just having someone talk over footage of a dog.
Yeah, they don't even try and match it up to the dog flapping its gums.
Or even the dog doing action that matches the dialogue sometimes.
And they're able to communicate with each other, so I guess they're all like telepathic?
Yeah, that has to be because they're not even growling. They're just thinking at each other.
Or is that them communicating using pheromones?
It's the old question of the Garfield comic strip, isn't it? I mean, because those are all thoughts. Like it's all
but
what's my question? My real question is, how does this cat eat so much fucking lasagna?
Yeah.
He's very fat.
Garfield thinks something. Does Odie hear it?
I think there's no evidence to believe Odie does hear it.
Yeah.
Nermal, on the other hand, he seems to be communicating with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
but that could be all body language.
The look who's talking to, the kids did the same thing. They just kind of thought at each other, mm-hmm. and they could understand and have conversations.
Which, having grown up with a sibling, that is not how it works.
Not at all. You have to communicate through a series of complicated fart codes.
Well, that was because they had the grace of babies. It was before they had Sin, Elliot. So they had the power of telekinesis.
I thought we were born
telepathy. Telekinesis.
Yep. Whoa, there's a full baggage there.
Oh, that's it's a good life all over again. He was born and the pain was so much that he destroyed the world with his telekinetic powers.
There's that deleted scene where they wish John Travolta into the cornfield.
And he just starts dancing in it or whatever. Yeah. Now, I don't even. Oh yeah, so they've got these dogs in their house. Yeah,
there's dogs. There's all over.
The two dogs don't like each other. It's a real. I mean, I guess Hollywood had never made a movie before about like a rich, fancy dog first having a trouble with and then falling in love with, like, let's just call it a tramp for lack of a better word, like kind of a dirty vagabond dog like this. And there's a scene where they almost have spaghetti with each other. Like that's. I mean, you got to give them credit for like an original gag.
That's the scene where they leave a sleeping Kirstie Alley and then go out on the town and walk past a full restaurant of people eating giant pasta meals.
Full Italian. I assume it's an Olive Garden.
Yeah, which
open
is
late.
Either an all-night pasta place or Kirstie Alley goes to bed at 6 or something.
She's very tired from taking care of these kids while John Travolta's jetting around with his posh spice boss.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Christmas is coming.
This movie does not let you forget it for a second.
It is constantly Christmasing up, and that's another mark in the direction of this not having been shot in New York is that literally until the day of Christmas, it does not look cold at all anywhere.
Yeah.
So we're introduced to the idea that the little boy wants a dog, and it's September. I believe when
going back to school.
Yeah, he's working on his Christmas list in September, and he says he wants a dog, and that's roughly around the same time as Danny DeVito dog squirts out of the mommy dog stuff.
Yeah.
So that means between September and
romantic about a dog.
Between September and let's say December.
Okay.
He becomes a pretty large dog.
Let's say December, since that's when Christmas is.
let's just say December.
I hadn't realized that, but it makes more sense than if the whole movie takes place in December, in which case Rox would be like a jack of a dog where he ages four times faster than everybody else.
It's a really sad movie.
It's tragic. Yeah. Dogs already age seven times as fast as humans.
He's a Solomon Grundy of a dog.
That he was born on a Monday?
Yep, but he died, like he just lives a week, right? Isn't that the whole thing?
Because he's a mayfly, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of kerfuffle over Christmas. Mm-hmm. Is John Travolta going to make it there? He keeps promising, I'll be home for Christmas, I'll be home for Christmas, I'll be home for Christmas, I'll be home for Christmas. Meanwhile, Kirstie Alley and John Travolta are kind of suspecting each other of being unfaithful in that, and this is illustrated by a double dream sequence in which John Travolta dances with his boss, a tango of some kind, and Kirstie Alley is just like making out with George Segal as a Santa Claus.
As Santa Claus. Because earlier on in the movie, we didn't mention this, Kirstie Alley, after she gets a pink slip from her like high powered like business job, the only job she can find is as an elf in a mall Santa Claus. Which seems like
in a mall
weird,
Santa Claus?
Inside a
like,
mall Santa Claus.
Like, do the kids crawl into his butt and there's an elf in there? He hands them presents.
And she's like, hey, how you doing? Have a spleen.
I mean,
don't tell him I'm in here. It's very warm and I don't have to pay rent.
That entrance makes the most sense because it's probably the lowest entrance to the ground, depending on dick length.
Wait, so...
All right.
We can go out of tape measure.
I forgot. You know what? Forget I introduced the idea of entering through Santa's butt. Let's just erase that from our minds.
But the decision on what interest to use is completely made on lowness to the ground.
Your kids.
Yeah.
What are they going to get on a step stool?
The kid.
I'm just checking.
Kids are like water. They choose the path of least resistance. They go into the first hole they find, dude.
Yeah, they're like golf balls or gophers.
Okay.
Yeah. It's common. I know a couple of things. That's one of them. The other is get on the floor. Wait, open the door. Get on the floor. Everybody walk the dinosaur.
Look, that's one of the things you know.
There's only like two things I know.
You're like, okay.
There's a filing cabinet. It's on the outside. It says things I know.
This is in his brain. Zoom into Stuart's brain. There's a file cabinet with spider webs all over it that says things I know, and it's mostly drink recipes and what different boobs look like. And there's a video cabinet next to it that just has Head of the Family, Invisible Maniac, and Castle Freak.
Yep. Oh man.
And then there's the fact that a kid enters through the lowest entrance to the floor.
And also the steps to walking the dinosaur. Okay, yeah. I open the door. Oh, I think I can walk the dinosaur now. First. Whoa, let me check. I didn't get on the floor.
Yeah, you'll get crushed.
They have a double dream sequence where the dreams start interacting with each other.
Yeah, and this is actually this is kind of a fun scene. It's silly.
It plays with what you can do in film, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And
it
John Travolta.
Inception.
At this point, John Travolta is more.
Whoa.
John Travolta is more charming as a.
This is John Travolta entering the room.
Why are you making fun of my movie? This is me, John Travolta.
I will say John Travolta does do a lot of voices in the movie. He seems to have thought, I do a lot of good voices. I'll bring them all out.
Mm-hmm.
Stuart, so you were saying John Travolta.
Well, I'm just saying that he is a very charming dance performer. And that's kind of what he was. Before Pulp Fiction, that was kind of what he was known for, right? Was his dancing skills.
Well, because Saturday Night Fever, along with Welcome Back, Kotter, I guess, those are things that made him a star. And dancing was something that he always had in his back pocket that he, when you look back at his career, didn't use anywhere near as much as you'd think he would.
I mean, he dances a lot in fucking Phenomenon or Michael, which is the one where he's magic.
Michael is the one where he's an angel. Phenomenon is the one where he has a tumor that gives him telekinetic powers.
Okay. There's a scene in Roadhouse in Michael where he's dancing around.
I think after Pulp Fiction, people
which is the one where he's dancing to Spirit in the Sky.
That's Michael.
Okay.
So after Pulp Fiction, I think people are oh yeah, this guy can dance. So they shoehorn dancing into almost all of his movies. But in Get Shorty, he doesn't dance, right?
No, I don't think so.
He just throws James Gandolfini down a staircase, which was another talent he had that people forgot about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gandolfini throwing. So
he silver medaled in the Olympics.
So they're dancing. Kirstie Alley enters John Travolta's dream and is like, oh, this is just a dream. We're not really cheating on each other. And Kirstie Alley goes, if this is a dream, I can do whatever I want. And she makes the blonde lady disappear, revealing just two boob implants, which falls saline bags that fall.
That doesn't make any sense at all.
Or silicone
bags. If her clothes disappear, why do those not disappear? I mean, maybe that the Lord doesn't. Because it's not technically part of her body, he considers them unclean, and so doesn't accept her spirit.
Yeah, he's not been raptured.
Yeah, she was sending John Travolta back to kill John Connor, and so she couldn't bring the non-organic material with her, I guess.
That makes sense, yeah.
But there was – it's one of the many jokes in the movie where this is a family movie, but there's some – I guess the early 90s was a time of very sexualized jokes in family movies. Well, I guess nowadays they have that too.
They do it all the time.
Yeah. Actually, you know what?
You gotta keep the parents interested.
I forgot.
Going to hell in a fucking handbag.
I forgot.
Have you seen the way these kids dress nowadays?
Crazy. What with the backwards baseball caps
and those fucking shoes with the wheels in the heel. Where are they going? What do they got to do that they got to get there so fucking fast?
You guys reminded me. I forgot that one day a hard real rain's going to come and wash the scum off the street in the form of kids. Now, and they dance together, kind of in a Stair Rogers type classic dance routine. Yeah. And long story short, it all comes to a head on Christmas, where the boss creates an elaborate ruse to get John Travolta alone with her in a cabin in a blizzard that I guess she arranged with somebody.
Yep.
And
she's very wealthy.
She unplugs the phone/fax machine, it's 1993, so that he can't call out, and begins to seduce him by pretending she doesn't know how to dance and he's got to teach her. Kirstie Alley is back at home with her mom, Olympia Dukakis, and the kids, and her dad, who has no lines in the film. And
he does nod once.
That's true. He does nod. He got paid SAG scale for that nod. And she says, you know what? We're not going to spend Christmas without him. We're going to go find him, because apparently they're
going to spend Christmas with the Cranks.
No.
No, the Cranks don't want us to celebrate Christmas this year. They're tired of it.
So she says, Mom and Dad, you don't have that many years left. See you later.
Each one of these Christmases is something I cherish. You gotta split.
Here's the Kahlua. Hang out here.
And they pile in the car. They drive up to the upstate New York cabin where John Travolta is staying. But it's a snowy road and a tree has fallen and blocked the path.
Yep.
I guess because either the wind knocked it down or the American soldiers are trying to block the Hessians from making their way through Brooklyn to force them across the Gowanus Creek and back into Manhattan.
But they don't know about the headless Hessian who rides through those woods. Luckily, if you cross a bridge, he has no powers.
Oh, okay. What if you cross Jeff Bridges because he's mad at me.
Yeah. You cross Jeff Bridges just by making him angry, then yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Soldier can't get you anymore.
Okay, good.
You should be building Jeff Bridges.
And not burning Jeff Bridges.
Bridges doesn't have any effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, so don't play that card in Magic the Gathering. You're going to spend 4 forest mana to bring in Bo Bridges. You tap him, and it literally says, has no effect. Thanks. Thanks, Maximum Bob.
Yeah, you keep it because it's a foil card and it's rare.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth something, but you don't have to put it in your playing deck.
You put it in your deck because you're like, I like alliteration, I guess.
I want to show off that I have this, but I just hope Dingus Egg comes up instead.
Mm-hmm.
Or what was that, Prodigal Sorcerer or something?
I don't know.
What was that was the one where it would hit you for 1 life and the really slimy kids would just play it over and over again?
So I didn't actually play that much Magic the Gathering, nerd.
Now I feel nerdy. Anyway, so they pile into the car. This tree gets in their way. They drive down a hill and they're stuck. Kirstie Alley, at this point...
She starts eating her children, I guess.
Yeah. She's trapped in a car with her children in the middle of a snowstorm. She is as calm as I could imagine any parent being in that situation. She's like, hey, kids, let's start opening presents, and I guess I'll go out and get a stick and then walk around.
Mm-hmm. And luckily, all her gifts are like cold weather survival gear.
Yeah, they're opening up hats and earmuffs. They brought the dogs.
An ice axe? Hooray!
a Sterno stove? Fantastic. They brought the dogs with them, too, because, of course, you're driving in the winter. You want to bring 2 animals that can't be put in seat belts and can only jump in your lap and make you swerve off the road.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes in handy when a wolf comes by.
Yep.
And this wolf is the best character in the movie, by far.
He's got a Catalan accent.
He has the fayest voice.
He's either Catalan or he's coded as gay.
This
I don't know.
Wolf is, for some reason, coded as like a gay black man on the DL. He's like a still-in-the-closet Titus Andromedon from Kimmy Schmidt. I was going to say Titus Androgynous, which is a Flophouse joke, not a real thing. And he fights with rocks, and rocks... fights him off.
He doesn't fight.
And rocks,
well, he doesn't throw
steady.
Rocks.
No,
we're
no,
talking
no.
about Rocks the character.
Rocks the dog.
So like, we get,
by this point also, Rocks the dog and Daphne the dog are in love.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. we are greeted to
lovers.
A classic Jack London Call of the Wild situation where Rocks has to face off against, we'll call him Spitz, I guess.
Yeah. Let's call him Gay Wolf.
I mean, there's a laser wolf, but I guess he's not gay.
No, and he wants to marry Tsidal because he's lonely.
What were we talking about? Okay, wolf.
Fiddler on the Roof. Wolf. So Fiddler on the Wolf is the story is the story of a family of wolves who are Jewish, and they've got 2 marks against them. 1, they're Jewish in Tsarist Russia. That's tough. 2, they're wolves. So even the right human Jews don't want them around.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to go to America. It's called An American Tale, T-A-I-L, Fiddler on the Wolf, Part 2, The Reckoning.
I'm trying to come up with puns for the songs.
Somewhere Out Wolf.
Yep, perfect.
There are no whatever kills wolves in America, and the streets are paved with whatever wolves.
Silver, yeah.
Silver.
Silver kills
no, that's,
wolves.
That's deadly to these wolves.
Yeah.
Now, the sequel... Fiddler on the Wolf Goes West tells the story of the same characters, but they go west. How far west? Too far west. They drown in the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, no.
Don't worry. Luckily, they're saved by...
sea turtles?
Poseidon?
Both. Poseidon riding a sea turtle.
Okay.
And Captain Caveman. We're reintroducing the character. We're rebooting him for the 21st century as like a gritty Captain Caveman character.
Okay.
He's more savage.
And
he kills people.
And he's got... like a giant caveman penis and balls hanging out.
Wait,
you're
what?
So into penis and balls.
I thought you were saying dark and gritty.
I don't understand how that's. Do the dark Christopher Nolan super movies involve giant penises hanging out?
I don't know. I thought we were just blue sky.
You're right. There's no bad ideas in this room except for that one.
Yeah, I didn't know there was all this judgment.
I gotta say, nothing would be less dark and gritty than if superheroes walked around with their penises hanging out,
going.
Spinning around in circles. Yeah,
how's he gonna fly around? Oh, I guess he's got that club with a little bird in it.
Oh, no. The club now, because it's dark gritty, it's just a club. It just beats people.
The only way that superheroes could activate their powers by doing a little pinwheel penis action.
Frederick Wortham would have been right. He would have been right that comic books were distorting sexually and in delinquent ways the juveniles of America if that was the only way they could activate their powers.
But Dr. Wortham, my character, the pinwheel, is just an innocent man who got bitten by a radioactive penis. And now he has to use his penis for powers.
I don't know where to start with telling you what's wrong or problematic at the very least with that synopsis. Okay, my character Batman. He bats things away with his penis when crooks throw them at him. And Robin, and that's his underage lover.
He just lives with his ward called Junior Butts.
Junior Butts, who's actually an old Sikh crusty sea salt who served in the Merchant Marine during the Spanish-American War. Okay. So he fights off the wolf,
yep,
and then goes off. He suddenly smells John Travolta somewhere, probably because John Travolta is so turned on by his boss that he's pheromoning like crazy.
Yeah, musky.
And he runs off to
get him. He's wearing that blousy shirt, and you know how sometimes that just traps the smell?
Yeah, yeah. And then whenever you move, it gets released through your neck hole and your sleeve holes.
Which, that was also the time where the sleeve holes and the neck holes were meant to be super tight, but everything else is extra blousy.
It was very billowy. It was a very billowy time. Everyone wanted to look like a circus tent. That was just the fashion. So John Travolta, meanwhile,
it's like old times where you if you're fat, it shows that you've got extra money. In this thing, Casey, it's like if you have extra fabric, it shows that you have
money. If you were poor, you'd only buy shirts that fit you.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get all this extra voluminous fabric that makes you look like you're drowning in a parachute. So John Travolta at this point is on to his boss. She unplugged the phone and she's trying to seduce him. He drops her on the ground and drops her from his heart. And when she says, "You're fired," he's okay with it. Rox shows up at the door.
Yeah, we have an immediate turnaround.
Yeah.
They're like, "Look, we need to end this movie now. Let's just wrap this up super fast."
I mean, to be fair, John Travolta never seemed to be attracted to his boss throughout the
movie. That's true.
It was more like she was always coming on to him, but he was always like, "All this work, I don't know what to do about it."
It was kind of like that movie Obsession, where you're supposed to believe that Idris Elba is being tempted away by this woman, but at no point does he actually seem tempted.
And also, he's married to Beyonce in that movie, right?
Yeah. One of the most attractive women in the world.
I mean, it boggles the mind. But anyway, so Rox finds John Travolta. Meanwhile, Daphne runs off and discovers how to be a wild dog and smells where the park rangers are, gets them, brings them back to save Kirstie Alley. Rox takes John Travolta back to the cabin, but along the way, the wolf comes back with his friends, other wolves, and a fight breaks out. John Travolta shows up with a ragged bandana, the bandana that Rox was wearing, and says, "Oh, I was attacked by wolves, and Rox saved me, and here he is." Rox walks in. Everyone was worried that Rox was dead.
They waited outside for a second. They're like, "This will be a hilarious Christmas prank.
We'll make everyone believe you're dead." "Do we prank people on Christmas, boss? Is that what we do?" Yeah. It's a thing we do on Christmas. We prank people. We prank people on every holiday.
He's like, "Wait, my
pranks are amazing.
Am I technically your boss, or is that like a new nickname?"
"Do I have to pay you?" "Well, you already pay me in food, so yeah, basically. Should I be contributing to like pension and health for you?" "Yeah, plan for my future, boss."
So John Travolta comes to the ranger station to find his family. I'm only assuming, since we don't see him, the ranger is in the back room, like slowly oiling a pistol to commit suicide because his one moment of happiness and family connection has been stripped from him.
Yeah, by these squatters. But the ranger turns up his radio and they hear Santa Claus over the radio. The boy's faith in Santa is rekindled and the movie's over. Or so you think, because that's when the craziness starts.
Yeah, this is the best part of the movie.
At the very end of the movie, so during the credits.
We were all expecting us a shot of like Rox and Daphne, the dogs, running around, and then a bunch of fucking puppies that look like each of them chasing after them.
Or a bunch of bloopers. Let's just face it.
Yeah, bloops.
Run-of-the-mill bloops.
Or like little versions of the two babies running after the babies.
What, to signify the passage of time?
Yeah, I don't know.
But instead, suddenly the way that things are filmed gets changed. And I joked, like, oh, here comes the music video, because it looked like a music video.
It was a different film stock.
And it turns out, no, it actually was a music video from famous baby... baby musical star, Jordy.
Now, you may not remember Jordy. That's because he is a French novelty act who had his first hit when he was a baby. And Santa Claus stops by the house, a different house than we've seen previously in the film, them living in, and shoves this super cool rad kid in sunglasses and a backwards hat and neon clothes down the chimney where the two kid stars of the movie are playing. This kid
At first, I thought it was like an Oliver Twist thing.
First, we're like,
and Santa was like,
"Is Santa bringing a new kid? Is that what's going on? Is this a stork?
Did the movie forget from the beginning of the film how babies are made? And now Santa delivers them. This kid delivers a message.
French kid.
It's like French, not quite rap, not quite techno, not at all rock and roll song about how it's Christmas and with the laziest delivery I think performing child has ever had.
He's like, hey, cool kid, you're so cool. You don't really have to move when you dance.
Yeah, and he sings about how it's Christmas.
Yeah, say Christmas.
It's called It's Christmas,
it's Noel.
Say Noel.
Say Noel, yeah. It's Christmas, Say Noel, yeah.
And he brings to life with magic dust the dolls of the world the girl has gotten. And then it turns out they're all in a dollhouse, and Christy Alley and John Travolta have been sleeping through most of this. And they wake up, and they're like peering into the dollhouse and seeing, I assume with horror, that their children have been miniaturized yep. like a bunch of Stuart Littles and are now trapped inside this dollhouse with a functioning fireplace.
And we're being led to Santa like a Pied Piper situation.
I have to say, if I was them, I would see Santa on the roof and grab him like King Kong and shake him and be like, what have you done to my children? Well, bring them back or I'm going to crush your old elf skull.
I've watched enough Puppet Master movies and Demonic Toys movies to know that that doesn't work because he'd turn his hands into buzzsaws and chop your wrist off.
That's a very good point.
I don't want to
six guns.
I don't want to overstate the final credits to this movie, but we watched the rest of this movie, you know, mostly like a normal Flophouse movie. And then as soon as the credits hit, hysterical laughter.
It's like we hit hyperdrive. It was nonstop laughter. We couldn't catch our breath. Tears flying from our faces like lusty Japanese characters in cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was, I think, because the movie is pretty boring and dull.
It's a normal.
It's just a by the numbers Christmas family movie with talking dogs. And then suddenly, very American. It is such a snapshot of America, middle class white America in 1993. And then suddenly,
Door to Madness flies open.
In only the way that a European novelty act can do. It just becomes crazy, and you're like, what is this? What rules of the universe is this playing by?
Because it has nothing to, like, I expect there to at least be a dog in this music video, but there's no dogs.
But
it is crazy. It's
he gets across the message that it's Christmas, it's Christmas.
Yeah, it's worth watching the movie to get to that point, because I feel like it's not going to have the full impact unless you see the whole film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, but boy, howdy.
You know, what I liked about this movie is how much of it takes place. So much of the scenes are the kids and the dogs running around this tiny little apartment, and it feels like they're trapped there like some like one-act play.
Yeah, it's the Exterminating Angel or No Exit or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, we should give our final judgments on this movie. We've gone way long. Is this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked? I'm honestly, because it's such a snapshot of early 90s America, as you said, and because maybe in no small part of the little push over the edge that final music video gives.
Of madness.
I'm going to give it a marginal good bad movie. I enjoyed this movie a lot more than I expected. Maybe it's because of it's almost certainly because of the curve that we're grading these things on.
And
after
also
watching
because
so
you
many
thought
bad
Danny
movies.
DeVito was hilarious.
Yeah.
As the wise Kraken dog rocks. Let's say wise Kraken.
Yeah. Tomorrow Dan's going to have to smear some bruise cream on his knees because he was slapping those knees at all them jokes.
Dan, I'm glad that you finally tied your sides shut because they were splitting. I agree with you because I think similar to Golden Child, if you grew up in the same years that I grew up in, then just looking at the clothes that everybody's wearing in this makes it worth having fun watching. And yeah, that video at the end is like, what? I almost wish we hadn't mentioned it so that people would be able to discover it on their own. But I'm going to say marginal good bad. It's not so bad that it's fun, but it's like if you want to see a movie where every outfit people wear is a crazy trip back in time 20 years ago, then go for it. Stu?
Yeah, let's do 3 for 3, guys. Marginal good bad. It's watch with somebody you love. For a dog, movie that opens up with dogs talking to each other and then dog sperm flying toward an egg and...
And ends with a little French kid rapping about Christmas.
Yeah, it's fucking great.
And in between, it's all hats and puffy shirts.
Yeah. Yeah, watch this thing.
New to Maximum Fun, the Beef and Dairy Network podcast, the number one podcast for those involved or just interested in the production of beef animals and dairy herds. All sponsored by Grazex, the latest grass replacement pellet from Mitchell's. If it's not Mitchell's, get back in the truck. Find us at MaximumFun.org or on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from. And if it's not clear, this is a comedy podcast. Beef out.
Okay, so wow, that's 3 for 3. That's Final Judgments.
What's now, the time for now?
Now it's time for a little bit of Flophouse house cleaning.
No,
it's, is it Flophouse housework or
you call it that? Nobody else.
Or
calls it
I'll
that.
Just call it Jumbotron.
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 Today's Jumbotron message reads: an idiotic man named Dink is pulled into several tales of intrigue around the world, coming into contact with ghosts, UFO cults, undead pirates, and roving gangs of clowns. These are my own honest words, I swear. This book is great. It's called Dink, and it's really, really funny. If you want to learn more, why don't you go visit www.dinkthebook.com, that's all one word, or just search for L. P. Wallinger on Amazon.com. That's the author, yeah.
You won't know what the clue is until you Google it.
Yep. So, check that out.
And if you'd like to have your message on the Jumbotron, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Jumbotron.
Yep.
Jumbotron.
And if you'd like a real-life Jumbotron, just like get a big movie screen and project Tron on it. Jumbos. Project Tron on the side of an elephant.
Mm-hmm. Operation Jumbo Drop.
But now it's time to move on to letters from listeners. Your favorite segment, my favorite segment, his favorite segment. Who's he? Who knows?
This is a spoken word version of one of my songs.
That's right.
Suddenly Dan's trying to get in on the act of wasting time before the letters start. Well, get one thing straight. Get one thing straight, Dick. Nobody wastes time like Elliot. Nobody wastes time like Elliot. Let's count the number of ways he can waste time.
Oh, no.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. That just counted as one way. Oh. Counting is a way to waste time. Number 2, remembering things. Hey, guys, do you remember a couple minutes ago you were saying
this
a thing
is the fucking PM Dawn spoken word breakdown?
No, normally I just pretend to be annoyed by this, but oh boy.
No, avoid the annoyed, Dan.
You know what? I made a mistake. Before we move on to letters, I just want to thank a couple
people. I wasted
people.
A song.
I just want to thank a couple people who sent things in. Thank you to Vanessa for the Colonial Williamsburg cookbook and other ephemera that she sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks also to Anne Marie Newman for the care package. Came on a bad day, so it was much appreciated. And then a gift to all of us here at the Flophouse. A big thanks to Bill O'Donnell for the very generous gift of a digital recorder.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Bill.
To use
too nice.
As a backup. It's he sent it in saying in case there was another Babylon AD situation, he wanted us to have a
famous lost episode.
A backup recording option. And so we do now. Thank you so much.
Above and beyond, Bill.
Yeah, very much so.
I don't mean that nearly as sarcastically as my voice always sounds.
Stu just sounds sarcastic, but he means it from his heart. But thank you very much. Thank you. I want to thank you. Oh. Oh. It's Mr. Roboto.
But the first letter of the evening is from Pete, last name withheld, who writes...
Peter Dinklage.
Hey guys, it's me, Pete D. Thanks for watching my movie, Little Bit of Heaven.
Big fan.
after your Fateful Findings episode, I had to write in. My partner and I cemented our relationship at a midnight showing of Neil Breen's modern masterpiece, which screened in a theater to us and maybe five other people. Later on, we rallied a few friends to attend another screening, and as incentive, I created a drinking game I call Inebreenated. Mm-hmm. After the film's writer / director / hunk / heavy / hacker / magician,
he's also the caterer,
who also may be supernatural. If you're interested, you can find it in its all its glory here. And he sends a link to the drinking game, which I hope I remember to put up on the website.
Only time will tell.
I bring it up
because somebody call Dan on Saturday and remind him to put it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's 123 fake number. You just program it.
Wow,
whatever.
You got that one locked in. Huh?
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
So your area code is 123.
That's right. I live in Colonial Williamsburg.
Nope.
Oh yeah, okay. That's where you
the
got
first
your
area code.
Yep.
I bring it up because at the end of the
this
drinking,
is how we used to dip candles. Bleep, bleep. What's that, Goody Thomas? Yeah, I'll stop by. Sorry, Colonial Booty Call. We had these back then.
I bring it up because at the end of the drinking game, the winner / loser was tasked with calling Neil Breen. We found an old ad. Apparently he was or is a real estate agent.
Oh, still is.
With a phone number, and it was promptly added to the game.
Oh, he must live in Colonial Williamsburg. He has a phone number.
And fellas, I called, and Neil Breen picked up. For real. I was totally paralyzed. I'm not an experienced prank caller or anything, and I didn't think there was any chance I'd be talking to...
Did you call him Sizzle Chest?
Well, he says, I did.
Learn from the best.
I didn't think there was any chance I'd be talking to Dylan. Whoops. Sometimes I call Breen by his character names. He really disappears into a role. Mm-hmm. He said, hello? 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 And then waited before hanging up. Anyway, I do have a request. Is there any possibility you could call on the power of the Flophouse fans to dig up Breen's older movies? Double down on especially I'm Here, Ellipsis Now, with an extra dot in the ellipsis.
Is that the one where he's like a cyborg Jesus?
Well, that's what he says. I'm Here Now is the one where Neil appears to be some kind of robot space Jesus who enacts revenge on drug dealers or something. Double Down was briefly on YouTube, but I left before I could consume it all.
That's the one where Neil Breen is two breaded chicken patties, right?
Mm-hmm.
That one, I can't explain Double Down. I watched it. God help me. I can't.
This is Dan talking in the voice of Dan and not the writer.
Yeah. I did, however, witness an even recklesser abandon when it came to laptop usage in Double Down. And Neil's exclamation of, oh, geez, when his topless girlfriend was shot by a sniper while she was in a hot tub is not to be missed. Pete, last name withheld.
Dinklage.
But he's got a new one coming up. Pass through.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure what he's calling us to do when he says, is there any possibility you can call on the power of the Flophouse to dig up Neil Breen's older movies? I mean, they do exist.
You can buy
there.
Them from him, right?
I don't know whether the earlier ones you can still buy...
directly from him?
Website.
That'd be crazy.
Because Fateful Findings you can only officially buy from him.
I know that if you dig hard enough, both Double Down and I'm Here, Ellipsis Now
what if
are
you're the world's
available
best...
on the internet for free.
Yeah, okay. What if you're the world's best hacker?
But that's Neil Breen. And why would he steal his own movies?
What if I was
He's
the world's second best
top
hacker.
Government secrets?
Yeah.
And the second world's best hacker, Swordfish, a.k.a. Hugh Jackman, is busy dancing up a storm on Broadway or something. Mm-hmm.
So if this all sounds ridiculous to you, new listeners, go check out the film works of Neil Breen.
Or just our episode on Fateful Findings.
Okay. I did a group watch of both of these movies with
thanks for inviting me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with the Flophouse Facebook group.
Oh, thanks
this
for not inviting me.
This is something that
me.
A lonely person does.
Oh,
Elliot. Oh, wow.
No, Dan, that's not true. I mean, it kind of is, but...
But they're both worth watching. I mean... My favorite of the two is I'm Here Now. I think that
he plays a robot, Space Jesus.
Yeah, I think that Fateful Findings is still the most accessible one in terms of if you're looking for a bad movie to watch with people. But I'm Here Now is maybe the craziest one. If you love the ending of Fateful Findings, where he gets all of the corrupt government officials to commit suicide, you will double love the end of I'm Here Now, where he literally crucifies the bad guys on crosses out in the desert.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, sold.
I'll watch that. I'll buy that for a dollar. Neil Breen's RoboCop.
Oh, no way. I guess that may, I mean, that's kind of what RoboCop is a robo space Jesus.
Yeah, very much so. He comes back.
This next one is from Alex Last Name Withheld, who writes, I need to know your answers to a very Alex important Winter. Question.
I thought it was Alex Mack.
Oh, okay, we'll find out.
Let's say a genie appears to you and offers the following deal. You will receive a no-limit credit card, and the genie will pay your bill. You and your family
Why
will not...
Why doesn't he just give you infinite money?
Can I call myself a no-limit soldier?
You can do whatever you want to.
Okay, wow, I guess you're you're speaking for the letter
so
writer.
You're That's the right. genie?
That's right. So answer my question. What?
Mega like a high, mega hiney ho.
Some kind of game genie who gave me 99 lives on Contra.
But made me flicker in a weird way. You will receive a no-limit credit card, and the genie will pay your bill.
Well, what I like about that is that the genie, like, I don't give a shit if the genie pays or not. I just don't want to pay. It's like
that the genie has to write a check, or I guess it's just direct pulled from his bank account.
Yeah, the credit card company is more powerful than a genie, apparently.
The genie, he's inside the lamp, sitting at a desk with little half glasses on his nose, writing a check and putting it in an envelope. Do I make this out to Capital One or MasterCard or what? I don't know. How does this work? I forget. I'm 1,000 years old.
You and your family will never again want for money or any material needs. However, in order to earn this arrangement,
here's the catch:
you must agree to watch the movie Las Vegas once a day, Monday through Friday. You are not allowed to multitask, close your eyes, play on your phone, etc. If you miss the day, the genie stops paying your bills. Las Vegas is 105 minutes long, which works out to about a 9-hour work week. The rest of your time is your own, which you can use to watch better movies, do rewarding creative work, jerk off, etc.
I can't do that while watching Las Vegas.
Well, you can multitask.
What if he's turned on by the babes in Las Vegas?
It's still multitasking.
How is this going to be enforced? Is there going to be like another genie with a gun?
At that point, the genie has to
apparently the only repercussion is that the contract is voided.
Well, but the genie has to watch the movie with you to make sure. And so that means the genie has to watch every day. And he's like, why did I do this? I'm really punishing myself.
Yeah.
Mephisto is just sitting next to you watching Las Vegas every day.
Well, Alex Last Name Withheld seems to really want an answer to this question, whether we take this.
Oh, sorry, Alex.
Deal.
I didn't mean to get off topic.
9-hour work week.
I think I might take that deal.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a son you got to feed.
I got to put him to college eventually.
Duh.
Whoa. Wow. Dan's become a bad boy.
Duh. Sure you take that deal. Las Vegas? I mean, it's not even the worst movie we watched for a while. 9 hours a week?
Dan, I didn't realize that I touched a nerve by being tentative about that.
For unlimited money?
Well, wait, does the credit card expire? Like,
no, man.
But the problem is, do I
get miles? I feel like I don't know
the
everything
The only way
about
it expires
it.
Is if you stop watching Las Vegas.
Are you going to be able to travel?
You got to watch it on a plane?
Yeah, do you have to watch Las Vegas at like an office?
Well,
charge up your laptop, I assume that you can watch it wherever.
Yeah, can I bring can I just download it to an iPad and that's my Las Vegas iPad and I just watch that? Does multitasking include like being on a plane or a train, an automobile, if you will?
I think multitasking.
A snowmobile?
I interpret it as multitasking just means that if you're doing something that would distract you from watching Las Vegas at the same time.
Okay.
So I don't think that necessarily being on a plane qualifies. But that's just me.
We got to talk to this
genie.
This genie.
What I would really like is
Alex,
for Dan to take this bet with a genie and then have to explain it the first time he goes on a date with a young lady.
So what do you do for a living? I watch Las Vegas.
Las
for a genie. Check, please.
Another one of these genie guys.
I'll have what he's having. Now, why? What does the genie get out of
you
doing this?
I mean, I assume that I'd get up and watch Las Vegas first thing in the morning just to get it over with.
That's how you would schedule your day?
You
want to start on a high note?
I mean,
why not watch it late at night when you're sleepy and maybe you miss the end of it?
No, because then
you
void that contract, dude.
This genie's tough.
Yeah.
So, but what if Let's look at my day.
Sure.
So Sammy gets up 7:30. I guess
Sammy is your dog.
Sammy is my son that you've met. This is my almost 2.5-year-old child who you've met. He's the light of my life. He wrote a song called Lego Chicken Nugget, and I really like it a lot. He wakes up around like 7:30. So do I get up before him at like 5:30 and watch Las Vegas? That way I'm already pooped before I'm even taking care of him. But then if I can't take care of him while watching the movie.
Yeah, you gotta.
I gotta do it during his nap, or I guess. I mean, we have a nanny now, so
maybe
I guess
maybe Sammy can sign
there.
Up for this genie deal, and then he'll have to watch it with you.
I don't want him watching that much television at his age. Certainly not Las Vegas.
Yeah, but what's he not watching television for?
He's gonna have unrealistic views of being old.
He's got to understand that it's okay to objectify women if you're an old man.
But he's got
to
understand that he's got unlimited money for life as long as he watches this fucking movie.
That's the other thing. Then, so does that pass on to the next generation, or when I die? Does the credit card get cut off and suddenly my family is not wealthy anymore? Can we write ourselves a bunch of checks for money on the credit card? The genie pays that off and we're like, see ya. We've got enough money. Mm-hmm. I just charged $100 million worth of...
Yeah, I think you just loopholed this genie.
Yeah, take that genie. Because I don't need infinite money.
Yeah.
I just need a lot of money.
Yeah, you just deviling down to Georgia that genie.
And now here's the other question. What's the credit limit on this credit card? Because it's not
it's
like...
It's a magic card. I think it's got no credit
limit. Oh, it's a magic card. No, there's no such thing as a free lunch, Dan. There's always a catch. There's got to be one. There's probably
a catch is Las Vegas.
There's probably like a $95 annual fee. But also, but it's like, can I only charge up to a certain amount for certain times? Or is this just an infinity card? Genie... Write in and explain this.
Yeah. And we'll see. Then we'll see whether we're taking your deal or not.
I was about to call him John B, but
Eugenie Levy.
Eugenie Levy.
Are you straight tripping, boo?
You got me straight paying off your credit card, boo. Are you straight tripping, boo?
So, yeah.
I would watch that show, Schitt's Creek, with Eugene Levy if he said that line in every episode. Maybe it's a fine show. I haven't seen it.
Last letter of the evening. It's titled...
I'm a genie.
It's titled, In Response to Dan and the Golden Child Asking If People Knew What He Was Talking About. And it goes like this.
This isn't Streganona, is it?
I do. He's talking about touching his wiener. Sent from my iPhone, Rick.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't remember what...
That's what I was talking about.
I don't
about.
Remember what it was in reference to.
I was talking about touching your wiener.
You were touching my wiener?
Yeah.
Why
were you doing that?
When we were recording?
Yeah, just to see.
Just to see what? If it's still there?
Yeah, man. Just to see what's going on.
Just to see what's going
okay.
on.
I'm just curious.
I'm the only one with a child. I'm the only one who has physical evidence that he has a penis that functions.
He was doing it as some kind of fertility idol.
Oh, well, that makes sense then. Okay, that's all you had to say.
For all I know, you're like a Ken doll down there.
A Kindle?
A Kindle.
Well, you know, like a Kindle down there.
You're a Kindle down there. You're like sort of a pleasant experience, but there's something a little off about it.
It kind of hurts your eyes eventually.
Yeah, you don't really enjoy it as much as like normal.
No, but that's true. My penis is not a full substitute for an actual book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now what do we do in this fucking thing?
Now, the last and final, those two words mean the same thing.
Okay.
Segment on the show.
The post-penultimate segment.
is recommendations. Movies that we watched, that we actually liked, that we would recommend people to watch without the usual caveats.
Okay, so this is a new segment where we recommend a movie we like.
Not new. It literally goes back to the first episode of the show.
Trying it out. We'll see if it sticks. Yeah, you got to constantly reinvent ourselves.
Try it out.
We're like Madonna that way.
Goes back to episode number one. Is there a movie? I mean, I'll go if you...
You're talking. Keep going.
Sure. I watched a little movie that a lot of people, I think, dismissed without seeing it for a couple of good reasons. Number one, it has a totally stupid title. Number two, it had a terrible...
it's called Jurassic Park.
it had a terrible trailer. Number three, it was written by someone that the internet has decided they hate. That's Diablo Cody.
Oh, okay.
But I watched a movie called Ricky and the Flash.
Oh, she made the mistake of being successful.
Yeah. And I really liked Ricky and the Flash. It was, I mean, I watched it because Jonathan Demme directed it, and Jonathan Demme is one of my favorite directors.
It's weird.
He of Stop Making Sense and Something Wild and Silence of the Lambs. Mm-hmm.
It's funny how that first movie is about music and the last movie is about silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Rachel getting married, which I like a lot more than most people do.
Like me.
I don't like it very much either. But hey, it's a free country. You can like whatever you want.
Well, then you probably won't like Ricky and the Flash because I feel like it's a slightly worse version of Rachel getting married.
Really? But it's about Meryl Streep as a rock star, right?
Well, but it's also like she goes back home first to comfort her daughter who is getting divorced, but then to go to the wedding of her son who is getting gay married and... Or married, as it's called. I'm specifying that because she plays like kind of a Republican character in the
Ricky
movie. So she like it's a difference that would not pass her by her character. But it's, you know, it's the same sort of like a family gets together and then there's a lot of music. Sort of movie that Rachel getting married was.
Oh, yeah, so you're probably right that I won't like it. But you never know.
Yeah, but Rachel getting married had Elliot's ex-girlfriend, so you had some extra baggage there.
Right off the bat, I was not into it, and also not my ex-girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. It's a little...
It doesn't know I exist.
It's a little self-indulgent towards the end with all the musical numbers, especially because I don't think that... I mean, as good as Meryl Streep.
Self-indulgent raves Dan McCoy.
as good as Meryl Streep is in the live musical numbers, because they are all done like they're all like her.
She's actually doing
performing.
It.
Yeah,
as good as she is, like she's not necessarily as good as you would want her to be. Considering
there's a reason she's a great actress, and not a rock star.
Yeah, considering there's like 50 musical numbers in the movie, you'd be like, all right, that's enough of this.
But she's better than in Mamma Mia, right?
She's definitely better than Mamma Mia.
What about Into the Woods? Is she better than Into the Woods?
She's better than Into the Woods.
Okay.
Is she better than in Kramer versus Kramer, where she doesn't sing?
No, she's not better than Kramer versus Kramer.
Okay.
But it's, you know, it's got her and Kevin Kline plays her ex-husband. And I always love seeing Kevin Kline
in
basically any fucking thing.
Mr. Fish Odor.
So if you were put off by the stupid fucking name, or as I said, the terrible trailer.
I think that's not a bad name.
Neither of those things put me off.
Yeah. If anything, you reminded me that John Demme directed it. Puts me off more.
Wait, really?
We know that. You know this. I'm not such a huge fan of this.
Really?
Yeah, he's all right.
All right.
Yeah, you saw Truth About Charlie and you're like, fuck this guy.
I was like, tell me some lies about Charlie if this is the truth.
Well, you just reminded me how awesome Silverado is, another movie with Kevin Kline. But that's not my recommendation. I'll recommend that at another time if I haven't already. So I recently watched The Invitation, which is a thriller. I can't remember. I don't remember the name of the director, but she directed Girl Fight, and she also directed Aeon Flux and another movie or two. But she's been around and made a couple of movies, and this is a fairly small movie. It's a thriller. It's about a guy who is invited to a dinner party with some old friends, and it's being hosted at his ex's house, who he hasn't seen in quite a while. And the two of them split up after some kind of a trauma. And it is really tense. And it's also, I think in a lot of ways, very true to life. And it reflects the way people kind of get over deal with grief a little bit. And it's a great thriller. So check it out, The Invitation.
I'm going to recommend a less new movie than you guys recommended, which is probably a surprise. I'm usually pretty cutting edge with my recommendations.
You usually recommend a movie that comes out in 3 years.
Yep. I'm going to recommend a movie from the 70s called China 9, Liberty 37, which I originally recorded because the title is crazy. But it's a spaghetti western. The Italian title was Amore, Piombo e Fiori, or something like that. Which perfect. Is like love something and
perfect.
Anger. I don't know.
Perfect.
It's a perfect pronunciation.
Yeah.
But I know it as China 9, Liberty 37. It's a Monty Hellman movie who did, you know, like Tulane Blacktop and Cockfighter. And was it just called Cockfight?
Cockfight, I believe.
And it stars Warren Oates, who worked with him a lot, and the Italian actor Fabio Testi, and also Jenny Agutter, or however it's pronounced, from Walkabout.
From Walkabout.
And she's on Call the Midwife now. And,
American Werewolf in London.
Yeah. And it's the story of a gunman who is about to be hanged, and they say, hey, the railroad wants this ex-gunman dead.
Say, hey.
Hey.
Hey, dude.
It's kind of like that.
Salute your shorts.
The railroad wants this ex-gunfighter dead. If you kill him, you're off the hook. We're not going to hang you. But he comes to like the guy, Warren Oates, who's this ex-gunfighter who's still a super tough guy, and unfortunately falls for the gunfighter's much younger wife. And it's like a spaghetti western with a film noir plot applied to it. And it's a movie that I'm recommending partly because I enjoyed it. It's not the most amazing movie in the world, but it's a really good, solid spaghetti western. And if you wanted to see the Mother Superior from Call the Midwife nude, she's nude in a bunch of scenes in it. But
who wouldn't?
It's also a movie that has never, I think, received a home video release. I saw it because it was on Turner Classic Movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those movies I'm saying that you should, if you like spaghetti westerns, you might not see it unless you're looking out for it or you happen to catch it.
I mean, it's got that catchy title.
Yeah. But also the...
What is it? China 32.
China 9, Liberty 37,
okay.
Which it turns out is what two signs at the beginning of the movie say.
Oh, it's not.
It's nine miles to a town called China.
Not like a volleyball score.
No, well, that's the thing. I was like, I cannot begin to understand what this title means. But because it, I don't know that it was ever fully released on film, it's one of the few times where I'm going to say, like, you should download this movie if you want to see it, because – you shouldn't. I don't like people who download movies for free when they could pay to see them. But if the owners of the rights are seemingly going out of their way not to make it available readily, then like go for it. And it's one of the few times that I'll say that about a movie. So it's almost partly for the novelty of that I'm saying go see it. But I enjoyed it. China 9, Liberty 37. A title that sounds crazy. And Dan is taking pictures of Stuart holding Archie.
Archie's a cat, not a human.
No, not Archie Andrews.
It's adorable. But as, you know, no matter how adorable it is, all good things need to come to an end.
As seasons change, so does the podcast.
Seasons change with the scenery, weaving time in a tapestry.
Yeah, hazy shade of winter.
Why don't you stop and remember us?
Two dogs have sex, a baby dog comes out.
And that dog will one day have sex with another dog, and so forth
before
and so on.
Returning to the earth like so much dead dog.
Really stopped being a metaphor at the end, huh?
Okay, well, thank you for that. And for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
Hey, I'm Stuart Wellington.
And what's up? Elliot Kalin over here saying bye.
Oh, peace.
See ya. So long. Goodbye. I love you.
It's this character I'm workshopping for when I'm calling around asking about my wife to find out what she's been up to. I'll call Charlene's bar and be like,
Hello, je m'appelle Jody.
Is Charlene there? How you say there?
She's working, oui.
They're like, no, she left hours ago.
That is what you say, working?
Is you a bride of the robot pinball machine? The corner? Je m'appelle Kevin Carr.
Sir, no, we got rid of that pinball machine years ago.
Is it the Adams family?
Oh, yeah, we. I mean, yes. I'm doing a cool character.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Baby Geniuses. Hi, I'm Lisa Hanawalt.
And I'm Emily Heller. And if you're not listening to our podcast, Baby Geniuses, you're missing out on stuff like
Camille Nanjiani solving the Zodiac murders.
Oh, who's like, would you ever go to a friend and you're like, hey, could you lick all these envelopes for me? You'd be like, you're a serial killer. I'm leaving right now.
Guy Branum talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
And it was just a great moment of like, oh no, I'm here, boys. Like, I'm on this side of the bench.
Megan Amram talking about intimidating baristas.
Just feel like they're always in character. Like, they're always in character as, like, cool hipster girl. Mm-hmm. And I just want to break through that barrier.
Plus, every week we explore a new Wikipedia page and talk to a crazy expert in the field of nonsense.
Well, any hack can make you not have a boner. I mean, it's about how you do it.
Right.
You
know?
And we're the only podcast with regular updates about Martha Stewart's pony or your money back.
We're not going to give them their money back, are we?
No.
Let's keep it.
Yeah.
Listen to our show every other Monday on Maximum Fun.
Yay!
Yay!